5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. For you guys listening to this, it is not a holiday at all, but for our patrons that are here joining me in the live stream today, we're recording this on New Year's Day, mid-afternoon, right in the middle of when there's a bunch of sports ball going on that I personally don't care about, and at least 20 of my best friends from Patreon don't care about either because they've taken time out of their day to come hang out with me. So for this week, as you guys know, we've been off for a week. I hope everybody that celebrates any of these holidays had a great holiday, and I just hope y'all had a great couple of weeks in general. I know I did. It was a real nice refresher for me. For those, a lot of the conversations we have in our like with our patrons and our pregame, you guys aren't privy to, but you know, I think I've talked about quite a bit of this on the actual show. That you know, I've been taking college classes over the last year, plus you know, teaching and doing this, and I've my days are jam packed every single day. Just keeping up on stuff. I did the count. I completed 47 credit hours of college this year amongst everything else. So I've just been really burning things at both ends. And usually anytime I have time off from work, that's when I really get a whole bunch of my college work done. In this case, the college semester ended at the same time that my school teaching semester ended, at the same time when we had a planned break for the holiday for the podcast. So I actually had like a whole week there where I didn't have anything to do. So I was able to really spend a lot of time with my family, get a lot of just kind of maintenance things done in the office and get things ready for next year. And then I was also able to do a lot of kind of the investigative work that I've been wanting to do on the Bynum case. For this time, hasn't been super fruitful so far, but I was able to get a lot of that done and make some other connections and plans. So it's been a great week. Now coming back in, and it's now 2026 officially. Looking forward to what we're going to do moving forward from here. The first thing that I want to do is just put this episode out while we're just kind of waiting for things to come together and just kind of catch everybody up and kind of ease us into this new year. So what I've done for any of our patrons, you guys know we do this all the time. We have a stream put up for the patrons so they can participate in these recordings live. So I have a bunch of our patrons are in the chat right now. And so they'll be, you know, adding comments and asking questions along the way. Give you guys an idea of the outline, what I want to go through today. First, I was going to update you where things are at with the Bynum case and what's going on there. As we're kind of, as you guys, I'm sure, are getting the impression, we're kind of getting to the end of where we can go. And I've been talking about this, what I can do as opposed to what I can do and talk about on the podcast. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then we get every single week, we get tons of questions about what's going on with our previous cases. So I thought today would be a great day to go through from season one all the way till now what's going on with everyone and all the cases that we've worked so far. So we'll update you guys all on all of that stuff. And at the end, we're going to talk about our plans moving forward and any questions that might come in from the patrons who are here live streaming with me today. So that's kind of the plan. Don't plan on it being a super long episode or a really well-formatted episode. Just kind of getting some information out, welcoming everybody into the new year, and giving you an idea of where we plan to go from here. So with all that being said, we'll go ahead and get started. So where things are at with the Bynum case, as you guys know, we've been through the entire police file, everything we have. We've been through all the trial transcripts. We've been through everything that's happened post-conviction up till now. And, you know, that's where we get to the point where we figure out where do we go from here. And in this case, there's not this big open like path of investigation that hasn't been tackled yet, like we have in a lot of cases. If you think back to like the Ed 8 case, it was like they only looked at Ed and there was this whole series of other leads that were just being ignored by the police that we went to. In this case, there wasn't an investigation to begin with. That makes it very difficult for us. I'm going to explain that so you guys understand kind of the distinction why sometimes a season goes on for 60 weeks and then other times it goes on for 6 months. And a lot of that has to do with what happened in the initial investigation and how long ago this was. In the Bynum case, we're talking about a case that happened, you know, this group of set of murders happened almost 26 years ago. So we don't have a lot of active investigating we can do. I can't go down, you know, I can't, you know, drive over and go to the liquor stores and pull their, you know, see if they still have their surveillance tapes or talk to witnesses that might have known somebody. Then it was a quarter of a century ago when all of this stuff happened. So we work on the initial investigation. And part of this, too, is me learning as we go, like what makes a good case for, you know, they're bifurcated, right? Like what makes a good case as an investigator for me to help investigate? And then what makes a good case for me to investigate and then make content about where all of you can engage and help us, you know, solve the case and help us move it forward. And one of the things that I'm learning is, in a case like this, where there really was no investigation, it actually makes it very difficult for us because, yes, there are all these paths that were never checked into and never followed up on, all these leads. Well, they weren't leads. That's the problem. We don't have a file that does that. And so let me kind of explain that distinction here. Remember, in this case, the murders happen within 24 hours. They bring in Chris Bynum. They force a false confession out of him. It's clearly bullshit. It doesn't make any sense. They bring Shaky in the next day. There's a confrontation. He comes back and says, hey, I'm recanting that. I'm redoing my confession now without Shaky in it. They arrest him, charge him. That's the end of it. So there's no other leads to work with. As opposed to, say, a case like Ed's, where just like in this one, they got the wrong guy. They left all these other paths of investigation open. But in Ed's case, they initially started to investigate, right? So they interviewed Leonard Mosley. They did some background on his work record. They pulled the answering machine tapes. They talked to witnesses. They talked to friends about his schedule and Elnora's schedule. You know, so there was like this massive pile of documents of the information that was gathered by the police, but then they just honed in on one direction. So we were able to take those leads and then, you know, pull at those strings, see what lined up, what didn't, and then take off from there in those other directions. In this case, we're flying completely blind because it was like, it's Chris Bynum. It's going to be Chris Bynum. It'll always be Chris Bynum. That's it. So there's no like documents there. There's no, we barely have a documented, you know, a photograph documented crime scene to work with. So like those things aren't there. That's what kind of makes the difference here is, luckily, in Bynum's case, we do have some leads. We had the Matthews confession that came out 14 years later. And that, you know, it, obviously Matthews is dead. So, but we have, you know, Talia Caldwell, who was the notary. Something fishy was going on there. And we have, you know, from the DNA testing, we got Joseph Tidwell and Leon Frevel, which we learned, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago that he got out of prison and is dead. So, you know, that lead shot. Tidwell, I don't know. There needs to be an effort made to talk to him in prison down in Mississippi where he's at. I don't have a whole lot of confidence that he's going to talk. So I think the real place where this case is going to be solved, if it's going to be solved, is going to be through the people around the Gerald Matthews confession. And the reason I say that is because Personally, after spending a couple of weeks really digging into it and looking at it from every angle, I don't think it's a legitimate confession. Like, I don't think that what Gerald Matthews in that confession said happened is what happened. We know a lot of it's provably false. But there's a reason he did it. There's a reason that he made that tape. There's a reason he signed that affidavit. There's a reason that he had it set up and he gave it to who he gave it to. And I think those reasons are what could finally unpack this thing. So that is the one true and I think good investigative lead that we have is trying to track down those people. So for where I've been at, I've been able to track down Ms. Caldwell. I know exactly where she lives, when she lived there. I know what she drives. I know her phone numbers, email addresses. And I've shot out several different methods of communication to her. And so far, I'm getting kind of the same response that other investigators got years ago, which is she's just ignored them and ghosted them. In this case, she's nowhere near. She's a plane flight away from here in order to like go knock on her door. So my kind of next step is to reach out through some private investigation networks that I have and try to find a PI in that area that will help me out and maybe go make face-to-face contact with Talia Caldwell. So we're hoping that'll happen. Still working on trying to get in touch with Roger Shannon, too. He was the one who actually testified about getting the confession from Gerald Matthews and delivering it to his attorneys. So there's a lot of that. That's what's kind of going on right now. And as I mentioned before, if I'm able to make contact with one of them and get some new information from them, that information is probably nothing you're going to hear right now because there's a group of attorneys that are actively working on this case, and that information needs to go to them to see what they want to do with it as far as filing any kind of habeas or appeals or something like that. But that's our main source of investigation. That is what we're working on right now. I also do want to point out that I do have the Gerald Matthews video up on our website now. So if you go to the case files on our website and you go to season 17, the Gerald Matthews folder, the video's on there, and I want you guys to watch it and see if you think what's going on is the same thing I think what's going on, which I'll refresh your memory. I mentioned this in our last follow-up. I did have some other people review it, people that have been connected to the case for quite some time, and it seems like they agree with me that this is what's going on. What I think is happening there, and this is important because I'm going to ask, this is where we're really going to tap into the Truth and Justice Army and our resources here. Everyone seems to agree. After I kind of made this discovery and then put the idea out to people and had them watch and see if they can confirm or deny it. So far, everybody that's watched it seems to agree that what's happening here in that video is that Gerald Matthews is lip syncing a recording. That in that video, that's not him actually talking. It appears there are two devices. There's a phone that's recording a video of him. There's a second device, maybe another phone or an iPad or a tape player, who knows, that's playing a pre-recorded confession. And as it's recording, he's mimicking, lip-syncing the words that are coming out of the tape, which is, you know, just adds a whole nother layer of weirdness to this already very weird situation. So most people seem to agree, or actually everyone that I've talked to that I've put this out to that have reviewed it, seem to agree that's very likely what's happening. There's a whole, which makes it even more important for us to get a hold of Talia Caldwell and Roger Shannon, figure out what the hell was going on. What I'm wondering is, because as I've watched it and people have suggested to me, that it seems like in the video that Gerald Matthews is saying something in part other than what we're hearing on the tape, on the audio. And so what I was asked was, do we know anybody who is an expert in lip reading? And what I told him, I said, well, this is how Truth and Justice works. I promise you, out of the thousands of people that are listening to us, we have someone in our audience that either is a lip reading expert or knows someone who is. So if you're that person and you can go, the video's up, you don't even need the video's up on the website. If you can, if you have an expertise here and you can, or have know someone who does, watch that video and maybe turn the audio off or however that would work and try to get an idea by reading his lips what he's actually saying. That would be a huge help to us and may put some of these puzzle pieces together. So that's something that I'm asking for, you know, any of you that have that resource to jump in and do. So other than that, that kind of wraps up where we're at with the Bynum case right now. I mentioned I had some things up in the air that I was hoping to put together for this week. One thing before we put, you know, I always hate to call it a conclusion to a season because, as you guys know, we're always going back to old seasons as new information is coming out. But as I said, there's not much more I can do on the podcast right now with this season. Somebody in our chat just mentioned that when Dr. Jackson was on, that she mentioned that there are some files that she wasn't able to share with me that I'm not privy to. And that's correct. There is more that I don't have, which is just kind of the nature of the beast when you have attorneys working on a case, which I am going to circle back to that at the end when we talk about kind of where we're going next from here. But yeah, so there's really not much more I can do with the Bynum case right now. As far as on the air, I am actively working on the case, but pretty soon here, I won't be producing more episodes on it. But before we kind of reach that conclusion, I want you to meet Chris Bynum. And so that's being worked on right now. Chris's attorney is working on making arrangements so I can get in touch with Chris and we can record an interview. So you all can hear the person that we've been talking about and that you've been helping for these last 6 months. We can get to know him. And that is kind of my intention for when we kind of do our for now conclusion of the season 17 case. So that should be coming up soon. I was hoping it was going to happen this week, maybe hoping next week, but sometime soon that's going to happen. All right. So now we're going to take a quick break for ads right now. And we come back, we're going to go through updates on all of our past seasons. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers.
I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits. Sharia, who's making progress with meds. And Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at weightwatchers.com.
All right, we're back from our break for our second segment today. I'm going to go through an update on every season that we've covered so far. I know most of the stuff you guys already know. I know we do have every season. We have new listeners that didn't listen to old seasons. But I just want to go through and let you know everything that I know about where all of our cases are at right now. And we're going to start all the way back at season one. For you guys that don't know, that haven't been around this whole time, you know, this show started off with me kind of making a, not even companion podcast, but I was talking about the Anansi Ed case. At that time, you know, the Serial podcast came out, Undisclosed came out. There was a bunch of podcasts that were all talking about the case. I was one of them. At that point, I started really, you know, that's when the whole idea of our crowdsourcing investigation came about, where it turned from, you know, us just talking about the case to us actively investigating the case. Adnan, as you guys know, is home, and he's home for good. His case is still being worked on. Rabia, if you follow her on social media, still makes lots of posts about all the new information that's coming out. So there's still work being done to exonerate him. But in the midst of all that, you know, Adnan's case, the conviction was overturned, then it was reinstated, then it was overturned again, then it was appealed and it was upheld, then it was appealed again, it was reinstated, sent back to the lower court. A new prosecutor came in. And in the midst of all that, the Juvenile Resentencing Act, there was a motion filed for that because Adnan was a juvenile when the crime occurred. And there was a Juvenile Sentencing Act hearing where Ivan Bates, the prosecutor, agreed that he should be released. Judge also agreed. And so Adnan this year was basically resentenced to time served, which means he's home. He never has to go back again. So as far as, you know, going back to prison, that's done. As far as his case, he still is right now a convicted murderer, and we're hoping, you know, that at some point we'll be able to change that. But most importantly, Adnan is home. Season two was first season where we covered our own cases. And that was one, you know, the case began with me, or the season began with me covering, these are all out of Smith County, Tyler, Texas. A guy named Kenny Snow, who had been convicted of an armed robbery and sentenced to 40 years, which was insane for, you know, if he was guilty, an armed robbery of a couple $100, you know, and throughout the process of investigating his case, he shared that prosecutor had made him lie on the stand or had given him a deal if he would lie on the stand and falsely testify against this guy named Ed Ates, who was convicted of murder. So then we started covering Ed's case. And this was, and again, this is all going to kind of come full circle at the end of this episode. You know, Ed's case wasn't being covered by anyone. He didn't have an attorney. He didn't have any media on him. Nobody had ever heard of him. I reached out to Ed. We started working on his case, and we were able to fully develop a case profile. I was able to, through the help of listeners, putting me in contact with Mike Ware of the Innocence Project of Texas. We were able to get the Innocence Project of Texas to take on the case. We started working directly with them together. over the course of a year and built a very strong case for Ed's innocence. Well, and we also built a very strong case for Kenny's innocence. Also, during that process, Kerry Max Cook, who's one of the most famous wrongful convictions in the United States, you know, he had been convicted and sentenced to death. I'm trying to remember back, but 4 times was like his conviction overturned, reconvicted, conviction overturned, reconvicted several times, starting all the way back in the 70s. Kerry was out on essentially an Alford plea, and there were some hearings going on for his case in Tyler, Texas, while we were in Tyler, Texas, covering Ed and Kenny's case. So got to know Kerry a little bit, be familiar with his case. To be clear, we didn't do anything with his case. I didn't do any investigating on it. We just reported on it, gave Kerry some opportunities to be able to share his story along the way. But this year we did have a great thing finally happen, that Kerry was finally, after all these years, declared actually innocent and fully exonerated on his case. So we're super happy for Kerry for that. Again, that's a case that was connected to our season 2, but we didn't actually work on that case. As far as Ed and Kenny in 2018, Ed was released on parole. He was the first prisoner in the state of Texas to ever be released on a violent crime while maintaining his innocence on parole. We were able to, we got the Innocence Project of Texas involved. Allison Clayton was his attorney. She got another attorney involved, a parole attorney, to work on the case and oversee the process going to the parole board. They presented a case to the parole board that Ed is not going to show remorse for this crime because he is, in fact, actually innocent. The parole board agreed, and they released Ed in 2018. He's been home ever since and doing great. There's still work being done on Ed's case. We're hoping that eventually he will be exonerated. But for now, Ed is at his home, and he's just thriving. He's got a great job. He's still with his family. His wife, Kim, stuck with him through this whole time. He now has a grandson. Things are great for Ed. Kenny, then, a few years later, he was not sentenced to get out for another, 15 or 17 years. He then got paroled based on innocence. And I didn't even know that parole hearing was happening. He reached out to me after he got released and said that his wife had presented them all the information that we had found on the podcast to the parole board and showed them that he also is, in fact, innocent. And they released Kenny on parole. And he's back home in Ohio. He reaches out to me every once in a while. Kenny's doing great. He's back in the gym. For you guys that know, Kenny was a boxer back in the day. Kenny's doing very well as well. So that was season 2. So far, everyone from season 1 and season 2 are all home. And we go on to season 3. In that case was Jesse Eldridge, another Texas case. This one, the Innocence Project brought to us. We had developed enough of a relationship with them through season 2. They brought Jesse's case to us. We spent a long time, about a year, investigating Jesse's case. It was the murder of Kiao Gove. Strange case. If you listen to season 3, it was, she was out for a walk around this high school. And she was jumped and stabbed multiple times, stabbed. It just looked like it was a complete random act of violence. Case was unsolved for years and years. Eventually, the police go and lie to Jesse's brother and convince him that his DNA was found at the scene, and that if he doesn't tell them that his brother did it, that they're going to convict him for the murder. His brother Troy does that. He tells them, oh yeah, now 7 years later, I did in fact witness my brother killing her. When Jesse goes to trial, his attorney suggested a bench trial because it was such a cut and dry. There was no real evidence against him. Which, for those of you that don't know, a bench trial means instead of a jury hearing the case, they just presented the case to a judge. The case was presented. The only evidence against him was his brother's testimony. Judge convicted him, and Jesse went away to prison, over 25 years ago, going on 30 years ago. And through our investigation, we found out that this information had, we got the DNA results, found out there was none of Jesse's or his brother Troy's DNA there. And I went and tracked down and interviewed his brother, who then told me that they had told him that. I presented him with the actual case file and told him, this is not true. Like, they lied to you. Finally, in 2019, Troy calls me and admits on the air that he had lied. He fully recanted his testimony, and he admitted that Jesse was with him that morning. He didn't kill anybody. He didn't witness him killing anybody. That was then, of course, turned over to IPTX, who sent it to the Conviction Integrity Unit. And we all thought Jesse would be coming home like within a month after that. It was literally the only piece of evidence at his trial. Now here we sit. It's been 6 years, going on 7. Jesse's still in prison. There has been more work being done on the case. It's been extremely frustrating. And here's the issue with Jesse's case. Because the Conviction Integrity Unit is involved and IPTX is involved, there's kind of a closed circuit of information there. So I assume the CIU shares information with IPTX with the agreement that IPTX is not to share that information with anyone else. So I don't know exactly what's going on with Jesse's case. What I do know is that there is some DNA testing underway. So it's not sitting idly. There's work being done on it. And what I've been told is that there's active DNA testing being done and that we can hope for some kind of result being shared with what's going on with his case this year in 2026. So I don't know exactly what that means. It seems like we have real good reason to be very confident about the case. So I'm just hoping in 2026 that we can scratch season 3 off the list as another one of our cases where the person is home. So that's season 3. That's Jesse's case. Season 4, if you guys remember, was just a mini season. We just did a handful of episodes on the George Powell case. We were prepping for our season 5. IPTX asked us to just kind of tell the story of George Powell. George Powell was convicted of an armed robbery. If you guys remember that case, it was a complete nonsense. George is a super tall guy. You know, I think he's like 6'3 or something like that. And there's video surveillance of this guy robbing this convenience store. And the person is, or actually multiple convenience stores. The person is clearly short, like 5'7", 5'8", nowhere near George's height. All of the witness testimony said that the person was short that robbed them. And George, again, is extremely tall. And he was convicted anyway. Again, we didn't do much on this case other than cover it. And there was some videographer evidence that came through to the courts. And George was eventually released. He was exonerated and released on that case. And as far as I know, is still out and free now. So that was our season 4 case. Again, just a mini season, not one we did a lot of work on, which led us into season 5, which was the West Memphis 3 case. This was our longest season. Well, actually, I think our season 6 might have been our longest season, but close to it. In that case, I maintain it's one of the seasons I'm most proud of as far as I'd say with the amount of coverage that has been put out on the West Memphis 3 case, I think ours is the most in-depth analysis of the case that's ever been done. Our focus was on the victims, who we coined as the forgotten West Memphis 3. And, you know, we didn't look at the case under the lens of just exonerating Jason, Jesse, and Damien. They, as you guys know, or probably know, they were already out on an Alford plea, had been out since 2011. We were really focused on figuring out who murdered those boys, Stevie, Michael, and Christopher, and getting justice for them. And so we spent over a year investigating that case. We actually made an Oxygen original docuseries about the case called The Forgotten West Memphis 3. In that, we talked to lots of experts and determined that the best way to solve the case is going to be through MBAC DNA testing of the bindings that held the boys. That ensued, listen to the season to get all the nitty gritty details if you're not familiar. But we did. It was a process. It was a long fight, a couple of years for us to finally get the DA's office and the courts to agree to testing. They finally got it. And this fall, those bindings, along with several other items of evidence, were all sent out to be DNA tested finally after all these years. I mean, it's been 33 years since the boys were murdered, almost 33 years, and that testing is underway. And in that case, in season 5, we know that we will have news very soon. As I mentioned, the DNA testing is being done. It's been at the lab for a few months. We were told in the fall when it got sent that we should get those results in December or January. So it's January now. So I would expect we should have DNA results in the West Memphis 3 case, and fingers crossed, finally get a real resolution to the case in the next month or so. So we'll keep you updated on that. Season 6 is Sandy Melgar's case. She was convicted of murdering her husband, Jim. This is a horrific case. Someone had broke into the house. It looks like a home invasion gone bad. Jim was stabbed to death and left in a closet. Sandy was hit over the head, knocked unconscious, tied up with her arms behind her back, and locked into another closet with a chair propping the door from the outside. Jim's brother came in the next day, found them, and then somehow years later, the police and the prosecuting attorney managed to secure a conviction against Sandy, again, who was tied up with her arms bound behind her back with a knot on her head, locked into a closet with a door propping the door closed from the outside of the closet. And they convinced the jury that Sandy was guilty of that crime. It's a complete nonsense case. It's horrific. If you guys listen to that season, their daughter, Liz Rose, played a huge part in the season. She was on a lot. She was on all the follow-ups with me. She has continued since we finished that season working on the case on her own, along with, you know, other content creators, along with other investigators. The case has now been passed on to the Innocence Project of Texas. Liz is working on that with them. And we had Mike Ware, who's the executive director of the Innocence Project, and Allison Clayton on the show back before we started season 17 to kind of give an update of where that case was at. They talked about some DNA testing and things that are being done right now. It sounds like there's some promising work being done. I did talk to Liz day before yesterday and asked her if there was anything new to report. And she said, as of right now, there's nothing new. So that episode, if you circle back to that one, would be the end of season 16 when Mike and Allison were on. So that is the most up-to-date information we have about that case. And to stay up-to-date on it, you can always go to freesandymelgar.com. And that takes us up to season 7. And Jamie Snow's case continues to be one of the most frustrating cases we've ever worked on. A guy named Bill Little, 17-year-old gas station attendant in Illinois, was shot to death and the store was robbed. Case goes unsolved for years. Again, very similar to Jesse's case. Eventually, a bunch of jailhouse snitches come out and all say that Jamie Snow confessed to this case. He gets convicted. The case was absolutely ridiculous. There was no evidence against him. But that has proven over these years to be one of the biggest problems in this case, because in order to overturn the case, you have to show evidence that he's innocent and overturn the evidence that was there. But there never really was any evidence that was there other than these jailhouse snitches, most of whom have already recanted, not only recanted, but admitted that the DA came in and gave them deals to give this false testimony. And just time after time after time, the appeals courts have denied the appeals. Nothing seems to be working. There was a fight for DNA testing over the last couple of years. That hasn't worked. That hasn't gone through. Jamie is in absolutely, without question, innocent. And sadly, he's still in prison. And, you know, I don't know where the case is at right as far as what we can do about the case right now, other than continue to stay in contact. I know a lot of you guys stay in contact with Jamie in prison, helping keep his spirits up. That's helpful. One good thing that came from our podcast is kind of reconnected him with his family. And so he has that relationship now, but it's a sad case that I hope at some point gets some resolution. It's pathetic that Jamie Snow is still in prison. That moves us on to our season 8 case. And that was an interesting one because season 8 was Deb Perringer. And this is the only case that we've ever taken where we didn't start the season with a real confidence that she was innocent. And the reason that happened was, we were asked by IPTX to look into the case because they had taken the case and were starting to work on it. They weren't sure if Deb was innocent or not. So they wanted us to investigate it to determine if she was innocent so they could determine if they needed to put more resources into it. In that case, it's also one of the few cases we worked where, as we moved through it, my opinion on the case was that most likely Deb Perringer was guilty of killing her parents. Now, I didn't fully get to the point of coming to that conclusion, but that's where the evidence seemed to be pointing. And then that's when this was in 2020, and that's when COVID came through and Deb ended up passing away in prison from COVID. And so we were just kind of at this impasse where it looked like she very likely was guilty. I know there's some people that still believe in her innocence. I'm not saying she wasn't innocent. I just wasn't seeing it. And she was passed away, so there was nothing that really could come out of us continuing to work on the case. So we just concluded our coverage of that case at that point. And then, as I mentioned, this is when COVID came in. So, and that happened kind of unexpectedly. So season 9 was what we called our COVID season, where we just interviewed other content creators and we couldn't really work on a case. Prosecutors' offices were closed. We couldn't get files. We couldn't get anything to work on any cases. So we just did kind of a talk show for that season. And then we came out of that in season 10, where we covered Jennifer Jeffley's case, which is another frustrating one and another kind of theme that I'm getting at here. So when Jennifer's case is brought to me, she's a 15-year-old who was convicted of murder based on a confession that she gave without a parent present Not just without a parent present, her mother, Jackie, was constantly calling the police station, asking where her daughter was, telling them she wanted to be there, and was being lied to by the investigators while they continued to interrogate 15-year-old Jennifer Jeffley, who eventually signs a confession that she thinks is going to send her home. And that confession said that she was the lookout for a robbery that had gone bad that ended in the murder. And instead, they just charged her with the murder and never went after anybody else for it. She was clearly innocent of the murder. She did not commit the murder. Even the state's case wasn't that she actually committed the murder. It was that she was the lookout for it. I don't believe she was a lookout for it either. But that case, when it was brought to me, Jennifer didn't have an attorney. And I had kind of, after some previous cases, like decided, you know, we need to work on these cases that no one else is working on, no one else is talking about. And so we can really dig into them, gather information, then turn it over to an attorney. But between the time when we took the case, when we started covering the case, an attorney took it on pro bono. And that proved to bring a lot of roadblocks for us. This attorney was very confident that he was going to get the conviction overturned like really quickly. And I kept trying to explain to him that he wasn't from Texas, that that's not how things work in Texas. We need to do this, that, and the other. He disagreed. We worked the case for a while. We were making good progress in the case, made several trips to Texas, tracked down some witnesses, found out some new information. And ultimately, this attorney convinced the family that they shouldn't be doing any more media. They should let him handle it. He's going to have her out within a year. And so essentially, we just kind of got cut off from the case. There was nothing else I could do because they weren't sharing any more information. There was people that I needed to talk to that I was being told not to talk to because they were handling it. And then now, you know, here we sit 5 years later. Jennifer is still in prison. I don't know what exactly is going on. I did have her and I haven't had a chance to get back with her because I've had too many other balls in the air right now. Her mom has reached out to me recently asking for some help again. I don't know what else we'll be able to do with the case, but that's just it is just a sad situation. We got kind of handcuffed there. And the sad part about that was, as you heard from these other seasons, I had a very good working relationship with the Innocence Project of Texas. I'd already talked to them about taking Jennifer's case when this other guy came in. And so that kind of, he took it instead of IPTX taking it. So that's where Jennifer Jeffley's case is right now. As far as I know, I haven't seen anything's been filed on it. Nothing's been done on it. And Jennifer is still in prison. From there, we did another mini season on Pablo Velez Jr. This was another Texas case, another one IPTX was working on. They asked us just to do just a short series on it, just to put some awareness out about the case. In this case, Pablo Velez, another guy, very sad story, is very obviously innocent. If you want to listen to season 11, it's a short season. I think it's just 6 episodes. He's very obviously innocent. There's plenty of evidence to prove his innocence. But again, the appeals courts have just denied his appeals at every step. If you're interested in the case and you want to stay involved in it, Lisa Martinez, who was on our show a couple of times, has been actively working on this case for years, continues to do so. If you go to the Facebook page, Justice for Pablo Velez Jr., that is the best place you can go for up-to-date information about the case and for information about how you can help. After that, we moved into another long case where we did a ton of work on, and that was the Pinyon Pines case out of Pinyon Pines, California. Worked on this case for a long time. Whole family was murdered up in the mountains, you know, near Palm Springs, but way up in a small little mountain community. One of our deepest dives that we've done and most thorough investigations. Robert Pape and Christian Smith are the two that were convicted for this, who were teenagers at the time of the crime. Another one, but there's a long delay. Years went by before they get convicted. A bunch of BS evidence came out and a bunch of false testimony in order to convict them, and then manipulated cell phone evidence. There's all kinds of problems that came out in this case. They were convicted years after the fact. Again, very, very obviously innocent. In that case, you know, we worked that, you know, right up as far as we could take it. And there were attorneys that were also actively working on that case. They were very, you know, they worked well with us. At least the attorneys on Robert's side were very comfortable working with us. The attorneys on Christian's side were more, you know, they didn't like working with media in general, which is pretty typical of attorneys. So, you know, there was a little bit of conflict there because, you know, had one side that was, you know, saying go, 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 and the other side saying stop, 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 stop. But as far as that case goes, the biggest problem there is when we ended our coverage, they were about to start filing habeas. You know, they were working with some of the experts that we had found and some of the information we had found to develop this appeal. They're working both state and federal habeas cases kind of simultaneously. And they've just been plagued by delay after delay after delay. They're just regular delays. And then all of the fires in California caused even more delays over the last year. And things have just been, from my understanding, have really just been kind of sitting stagnant right now with the Pinyon Pines case for the last couple of years. They've been in prison for 10 years now. And again, you know, both are married, both have families, and they need to come home. So we're just, you know, I did talk to one of the family members connected to the case last night and just let them know again, anything you need, we're here to help. I don't know what to do to help right now, but if you have something you need from us, let us know. One thing he did mention is for any of you that are interested in kind of helping out. So the boys are doing fantastic in prison, by the way. They have been since they've been model inmates, since they've been in there. They're in the Delaney House Project. They've both obtained multiple college degrees while they're in prison. They're running counseling groups for other prisoners. They've just been doing great things. You know, they're making the best out of the situation that they're in. But one thing they do is California allows them to do this. They have this some sort of little business in prison where they crochet blankets and sell them, and they use that to be able to buy food. Actually, there's a real problem it's probably all prisons, but I know for sure in the prisons they're in California, it's very difficult for them to get any kind of like real protein. You know, like people will literally steal the chicken out of the chicken noodle soup, you know, and sell it black market within the prison and stuff. And the guys are left with nothing. So they're, you know, it's very hard for them to stay healthy. So they actually make and sell these blankets so that they are able to buy like real food and get like actual protein. So if that's something you're interested in, if you're interested in buying a crocheted blanket by Robert or Christian to be able to, you know, help them, you know, have money in their commissary to be able to buy real food, you can just, for now, you can just reach out to me and, you know, through our email or through social media, let me know. And I can pass that along to Jana, who is Christian's mom, or I talked to Greg, who is, we heard from on the show a little bit in season 12. He is Robert's uncle. Greg's pretty tech savvy. He said if there's a bunch of people that want to do it, he can put together a quick little website to order it. But one way or another, if you're interested, reach out to me and I'll make sure that information gets passed along so that you guys can get a blanket, help the boys out.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at WeightWatchers.com. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Moving on, then there was our season 13 case. That's where we shifted into, we didn't have a good wrongful conviction case to cover that season, so we decided to do a missing persons season. And that one, we ended up not really kind of finishing the season. We moved on to the Luke Mitchell case out of Scotland, actually. You know, we were working on all these stats, or off of all these stats about all these, you know, hundreds of thousands of active missing persons cases, and we wanted to try to do one from every state throughout the year. And to try to put, you know, get eyes out all over the place and try to help solve some of these missing person cases. What we found out was that a lot of those stats aren't really accurate. Many, many, many of the missing persons cases that are labeled as missing persons are, you know, teenagers who ran off with their boyfriends or non-custodial parents taking their kids. And so, you know, we did several cases, and we had some very meaningful conversations in season 13, but you know, we ended up deciding that just wasn't, for our format, wasn't the best way to go with that. So then that's why we had shifted then into the Luke Mitchell case, which is a wrongful conviction case that people have been talking to me about for years out of Scotland. And then season 14, we actually circled back to season one. For those of you guys who remember that, it's probably, I don't know, the spiciest of the spicy Bob Ruffs that we've ever had throughout the history of Truth and Justice. And that was when, right when Adnan Syed is going through all of his active litigation trying to get his conviction overturned, another podcast came in and decided they were going to do what they called the deepest dive ever into the Adnan Syed case, which was really just a hit piece against Adnan and his attorneys. It was full of lies, intentional misinformation. Still to this day, it's hard to understand why they even did this unless they were just trying to get some clicks. But I couldn't stand by and listen to it, so I ended up doing an episode-by-episode reply to their episodes, which started off just kind of correcting misinformation. But what it led to, if you go back and listen to season 14, I really think that it ended up being one of the most insightful coverages of the case. And that's not to take anything away from like the Undisclosed podcast, who obviously did so much. But as far as like practically speaking, like really, we spent a lot of time analyzing the cell phone records, timing, driving routes, things that no one, as far as I know, has ever done before, and was able to easily and conclusively prove that Adnan Syed is innocent, even though, you know, probably the overwhelming majority of people already believed that. But that's what we ended up doing for season 14. And again, that's still Adnan Syed. He is home. But we actually made a t-shirt during that season that said, "Ask me how I know Adnan's innocent." And then I even did on our YouTube channel, I did a presentation at Obsessed Fest, which was, you know, how to prove Adnan's innocent in 30 minutes or less. It actually took about 15 minutes. And once you really understand driving routes, the timings, and the cell phone towers, it becomes very easy to prove that it was impossible for Adnan to have committed this crime against Haman Lee. Then we moved on to season 15. That was the only case we've ever done that was local to me. It was the Jody Hill case out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Jody, again, obviously, I mean, without question, innocent. We know Jody's alibi. The police knew Jody's alibi, and they decided to go after them anyway. But there's only, you know, Jody is a trans woman in prison here in Michigan. That case, it was a very strange turn of events. I kind of got to tangling with the police chief, current police chief, who happened to be the lead detective on Jody's case back in the day when this happened. And he sent a small version of his investigative file to the Attorney General's Conviction Integrity Unit so that he could say, you know, of course, I'm not trying to hide anything. I sent it to the AG's office. But what it did is it got them interested. They contacted me, or I contacted them, actually. We had some serious conversations. I sent them the full file along with all of my investigative work, along with the affidavits that we got notarized in the case and all the hard evidence proving that Jody is innocent. The CIU took on Jody's case, and as far as we know, as of right now, I don't know exactly where the case is at, because once they took it, they're not allowed to share what's going on with the case with me. What I do know is that the Attorney General's Conviction Integrity Unit here in Michigan is actively working on the case. Jody has had multiple visits from people from the CIU to the prison to talk to them, you know, to interview them and update them on what's going on. So I'm holding out some confidence that something's going to happen in that case this year. They didn't do all that work not to bring a resolution to it. So really hoping Jody Hill's case gets resolved this year. And then season 16 was kind of between the two seasons. We just decided to take a season, not off, but rather than working on a wrongful, we didn't have a case in front of us that we wanted to work that we thought was a good one. So we just, you know, just did kind of a hodgepodge season, which was nice because we were able to kind of go whatever direction things were going. We ended up spending a long time in there covering the Richard Allen case, the Delphi murders. We did a whole series in there where we talked about the Reed technique and interrogation tactics and how wrongful confessions happen. We had Amanda Knox on. Yeah, we just did a lot of interviews either that were either educational about how the system works with people working in the system, other creators, you know, with other creators that are working on other cases, and then kind of current events and true crime things that are going on right now. So we did that during season 16 while we prepped for our current case, which is season 17, Chris Bynum's case, and that's everything up to date so far. So that's where we're at. That's the full update, everything I know about all the cases that we've done up till now. And now before I wrap things up, just kind of want to give you an idea of where we're at and where we're going from here. So as I mentioned, I think that we are kind of coming to the conclusion of season 17. You hit a point from, there's always these like two approaches for me, right? There's like, what would I do as an investigator? What do I do as a content creator? And on the investigative side, in Chris's case, there's steps I can take that I will be taking. From the production side, it's very different when I come in and it's okay, what are we going to make in, you know, a 30 to 45 minute episode about this week? There's not much I can talk about at this point going forward. So we are going to be bringing season 17 to at least a for now conclusion until we get some more information here in the, basically, unless something else breaks, if we get some new information about the lip syncing or Gerald Matthews' confession, we'll obviously share that right away. Again, we want to hear from Chris himself, which I hope should be happening in the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to be, putting an end to, or at least a pause on season 17. Then we move on to where are we going next? Our show is never, most shows will do a season and then you won't hear from them for 6 months or a year. And then they do another season. We don't do that. We continue putting out episodes every week, but I always try to put out episodes that are useful to you and interesting to you, where either we're advocating for something or we're teaching about something or helping move a case forward. And so that's going to be kind of the plan for season 18, very similar to what we did in season 16. And the reason for that is, I kind of went through our submissions and I just don't see anything that's jumping out at me right now. I want to really take some time to make sure that whatever we get into for our next big case, which will be, end up being season 19, that it kind of meets all the criteria that we're always looking for. And this is where I'm going to ask for some help from some of you guys. I want you to help me look for cases maybe that are local to you where it is very likely a wrongful conviction, but nobody's talking about it. I said several seasons ago, I think it was after the kind of debacle with the Jennifer Jeffley case, that I don't want to work a case where there's already an attorney involved. And then I did again in season 12, and then I did again in season 17. Now, to be fair, in season 17, like the attorneys have been great. They've been awesome. But there is always, if you have attorneys working on a case and the case is going to be actively litigated, there are just always going to be things that don't work for me to be able to produce episodes about. There's always going to be those instances where, what will be like, hey, I found this lead. Here's a witness that I want to go talk to, where if I was working the case on my own, I would go talk to them. I'm qualified to do that. I'm a licensed investigator. I know how to do the, to get properly signed and notarized affidavits. I know how to properly question people and record everything. But it doesn't matter because I'm still media. So often what happens in those cases is the attorneys then say, well, okay, thanks for the lead, but please don't go talk to that person. And again, that's not to knock the attorneys. They're doing their job. They want to make sure that if they're going to get something out of that person that they can use for an appeal, that they get it the right way. And it doesn't have a risk of getting, leaked onto a podcast or something like that. So saying all that to say this, I don't want to work another case that's already being worked on by attorneys, that's already being covered by media, because it ends up feeling to me like we're doing all this investigative work, but we're also just kind of spinning our wheels. Like things are not going to be, the outcome's very likely not going to be different for the person convicted for us being involved, which negates the entire purpose of what this show is about. The show is about fighting for people that can't fight for themselves, about giving people a voice who don't have a voice themselves. And I want to go back to those cases like Ed Eight's case, like Kenny Snow's case, like Jesse Eldridge's case, you know, where we can really just dig in from the beginning. And even, you know, Jody Hill's case is another great example of that one. So what I want to do is to be able to take time to really find the right case, get all the documents and information that we need, and really set ourselves up strong to come in for our season 19 case. In the meantime, just like we did between the last two, and that also, just so you guys know, just a little bit of kind of behind the curtain, that also helps a lot. Like what we did with season 16 helps a lot with my own personal mental health, because it's a lot to spend every waking minute, every free minute, you know, working on these wrongful conviction cases. You just, in order to do it properly, you just have to just give it everything you've got all the time. And it becomes very emotionally and mentally exhausting. And then now that we're 17 seasons in, the other thing that happens with that is, you know, while you're deep into season 17, something's going on with season 15. And someone from season 10 is reaching out to you, and you're dealing with DNA testing for season 5, and there's a court hearing for season 1. And so all that stuff is kind of piling up all the time, all while you're trying to dig into deeply into the current case and trying to write scripts and episodes and do investigative work and all that. So season 16 turned out to be a good format for me to work a season for 6 months and then, you know, take 6 months off from that and do other things and be able to have conversations with other people that are involved in the criminal justice field and be able to have conversations with all of you, the listeners, and just kind of take some of that time to unpack while we prep and then go into the next one. So that's the plan moving forward, as we're kind of bringing season 17 to a conclusion. We're going to start season 18, and season 18 will be very similar to season 16, where we're just going to, it'll be hopefully a lot of interviews. And this is where I'm always open to, if there's a case you want to talk about, if there's a person you want to hear from, if there's anything like that, just message us through our email, through our social media. Let me know, and we'll try to get those people on, because we want to try to continue to learn and continue to grow in our understanding and our advocacy in the criminal justice field during the season while we prep to move into our season 19 case. And again, the other thing that I'm asking from you is find cases for us, find good cases, because the ones that we get thrown at us all the time through our submission form are usually like somebody like, oh, I saw a 2020 episode on this, you should cover this one. Or, oh, I saw a documentary about this, you should cover this one. Those aren't the cases we're looking for. What we're looking for is the one like, hey, I'm from a small town in Alabama, and this person was wrongfully convicted and no one has ever helped them. Can you help this person? That's the case that we're looking for. Those are the ones that we're looking for. That's what we're asking you guys. So you can submit those through our case submission form. You can just send us an email. You can just reach out, you know, through social media, through DMs on social media. But that's the help that we're looking for. So just kind of recap, that's one thing I'm looking for is cases. Two, anything you'd like to hear or anyone you'd like to hear from during season 18. And the last one, just circling all the way back, someone who's an expert in lip reading. We need that for our current case for season 17, because I think that is, again, in Chris Bynum's case, I think that if anything's going to be accomplished in that one, the way that's going to be accomplished is through Gerald Matthews' confession. If we can figure out what the hell happened there, and more importantly, why it happened, I think that's going to lead us to the who killed the 5 victims in that case. And with that being said, I plan on just yapping at you guys for about 25 minutes. It's now been a solid hour, so I'm going to let all of our patrons here get back to their New Year's Day celebrations. Hopefully you guys had a great holiday season. Hope you're having a great Sunday. And remember, we're doing our follow-ups on Mondays now. So when you listen to this, go right onto Facebook or wherever you want to go and look for those follow-up posts. Send us your questions. We'll be recording live on YouTube on Monday night for this week's follow-up. We'll talk to you guys then. Bye, everybody. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. Doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.